for a tool that's now obsolete in the newsroom, typewriters, and the Oscar-winning actor who loves them. Tom Hanks loves typewriters. He told us it all began in the 1970s with his first proper typewriter, a Hermes 2000.
I ended up just enjoying having them around because they're beautiful works of art. I ended up collecting them from every ridiculous source possible, some of them incredibly cheap. Sometimes I've overpaid for them. It really kicked off probably when I had a little excess cash. But better to spend it on $50 typewriters than on some of the other things you can blow show business money on.
Well, that obsession has now resulted in an app called Hanks Writer. That's Hanks spelled H-A-N-X. Tom Hanks partnered with the developer HitSense to create the app, which allows an iPad to type and print documents just like a typewriter. I got Mr. Hanks on the phone to try it out, starting with that familiar line, the quick brown fox.
You might want to put quick brown foxes, or because you got to get an S in there. So it's either
S.
The quick brown
well, jumps,
foxes
that gets
or,
an S.
Or the lazy dogs.
Oh, right. Okay, here we go. Every time I have done that for people in my office, they squeal. The sound. It's the
now,
sound,
you know,
right?
You notice the difference in the sound because there's the keys themselves, but then you have the space bar.
Yes.
And then did you do any capital shift in there?
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I did not. And
okay.
This is one of the quirks I realize of using this is that we've all developed new habits with word processing, right? And one of them is we let the computer do the capitalization.
Right.
Were there other quirks that you found, like when you kind of switch back and forth, that you have to get used to again?
Well, the only thing that, as far as in the speed with which I type, the only advantage of a computer is you don't have to return the carriage. You could just keep typing, and it will go back itself. What I like about the app is that you still get the ding, and you get the sound of the return.
Let me see if I can get there, right, to the end of the line.
Okay, yeah. You could just go diggity, 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 just do TK, TK, TK if you want to. And do a cap. Oh, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. And off you went. And if you do a capital shift, it will also make a unique sound unto itself.
It does. I see. Now, I noticed there were one or two aspects of modern computing you did not give up, one of which was the backspacing and delete. Now, there is an option to turn this off so that you'll be stuck with kind of X-ing out errors.
Yes.
Do you use it, though? I mean, isn't there something very different about making errors and not being able to kind of just make them disappear?
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, too. But you'll notice on the app, you can't just hold down the button and it deletes line after line. You literally have to do it one at a time. Tuck, 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 tuck. If you wanted to type out talk and you actually typed P-L-A-K, you have to go back three full spaces, 1, 2, 3, in order to correct itself.
I almost expected to see whiteout. I didn't know how far back
hey,
you'd
I'm
take it.
I'm writing that down. Hey, on our version 2.0, whiteout option, that'd be funny.
So in the end, do you hope this can be a gateway drug for a new generation? They've never gotten the chance to type on a manual typewriter?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, much of what social media and what a lot of the app makers are out there are discovering these kind of like backdoor Luddite habits. the amount of cool things you can do with a photographic app now to make it look like anything from a daguerreotype from, the 1860s to a Polaroid from 1972, that gives it a patina. And because you've paid attention to it a little bit more, you haven't just taken a picture and sent it off, that means it becomes some sort of artistic expression. I think that what I like about the app, the way it turned out, is that if you do want to adhere to a couple of arcane rules in which speed and volume might be sacrificed a little bit, but the advantage is that you get more of a relaxed pace and a specific look to it. Well, to me, that's a wonderful trade-off.
Well, Tom Hanks, thanks so much. What a pleasure.
Delightful talking to you, Audie Cornish.
Tom Hanks, actor, director, and the man behind the Hanks Writer app. She was edgy, outrageous, and ahead of her time. Joan Rivers was a comedian, TV host, writer, stage actress, director, and her career spanned 5 decades. Rivers died today of complications following a throat procedure. She was 81. NPR TV critic Eric Deggan says Rivers was a show business survivor whose tireless work ethic kept her in the public eye long after other comics would have faded away.
No one turned tragedy into side-splitting comedy like Joan Rivers, who even built a stand-up routine around caring for a handicapped boyfriend.
I lived for 9 years with a man with one leg. One leg. He lost it in World War II. Didn't even lose it. He knew exactly where he left it.
Rivers was an expert at using laughs to get past pain. Born Joan Alexandra Malinsky in 1933, she ignored her family's objections to become an actress in comic. She performed in the same New York clubs as Woody Allen and Barbara Streisand, writing lines for more established acts like Phyllis Diller and the puppet Topo Gigio. By the mid-1960s, she was appearing in front of the camera for variety programs like The Ed Sullivan Show, where she talked frankly about women at a time when you couldn't even say the word pregnant on TV.
A girl, you're 30 years old, you're not married, you're an old maid. A man, he's 90 years old, he's not married, he's a catch. It's a whole different thing.
But it was late-night host Johnny Carson who would become something of a mentor, featuring Rivers regularly on his Tonight Show.
Don't you think men really like intelligence more when it comes right down to it?
Ah, please, are we going to go back to that? Are you kidding?
Sure, I mean, it's a brain, you know, a caring
person.
No man
has ever put his hand up a woman's dress looking for a library card.
Carson made her the show's permanent guest host in 1983, but their friendship would end just a few years later after Rivers called to let him know she would host a rival late-night show on the Fox network, as she told the Archive of American Television.
I said, Johnny, it's Joan, and I think I'm leaving the show. I have my own show at Fox, and click. So then I called him back, and I said, Johnny, and he clicked down again, would not hear me.
Live from Fox Television Center in Hollywood, it's The Late Show starring Joan Rivers.
The Late Show with Joan Rivers struggled from its start. Rivers and her executive producer husband, Edgar Rosenberg, clashed with Fox while she struggled to compete with Carson. A year later, Fox canceled the program, leaving Rivers banned from The Tonight Show and looking like a showbiz pariah. Rosenberg killed himself soon after. Rivers told WHYY's Fresh Air in 2012, the toughest thing about old age was seeing loved ones die.
The loss is horrific. And when I go upstairs at night, this sounds so stupid, I always turn to my living room and I say, good night, Orrin. He was a man I lived with for 9 years. Good night, Edgar. It's terribly sad.
But she kept going through the 90s, teaming with her daughter Melissa to offer biting commentary from the red carpet for Oscar pre-shows on the E! And TV Guide channels. A 2009 documentary on her life, A Piece of Work, highlighted her drive to stay relevant and youthful. Its opening featured close-up shots of her face without makeup, revealing the nips and tucks of the countless plastic surgeries she joked about on stage. The film also revealed how tough she could be, taking on a heckler during a performance.
The only child that I think I would have liked ever was Helen Keller, because she didn't talk. It is just...
It was very funny.
Yes, it is. And if you don't, then leave.
Funny if you have a deaf son.
I happen to have a deaf mother. Oh, you stupid. Let me tell you what comedy is about.
Go ahead and tell me.
Oh, please. You are so stupid. Comedy is to make everybody laugh at everything and deal with things, you idiot.
And the controversies kept coming. Rivers was criticized for calling Michelle Obama a transsexual and saying Palestinian civilians deserve to die in the Gaza conflict. But the fuss didn't stop the work. In her 80s, Rivers still juggled concert performances, a TV show on fashion, an internet show, and promotion for her 12th book. Her attitude was summed up in an appearance on comic Louis C.K.'s FX show, Louis.
I think it's been easy. I've gone up, I've gone down, I've been bankrupt, I've been broke. But you do it. And you do it because we love it more than anything else.
Rivers also remained an inspiration for younger female comics like Sarah Silverman and Kathy Griffin, always pushing boundaries even after a half century in the show business spotlight. Eric Deggans, NPR News.
All right, what is the only thing better than watching NFL football on television? watching even more NFL football on television. More fans, like myself, will now have the chance to do just that on Thursday nights, like tonight. The season kicks off with the Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks. The question is a TV network taking a risk using a primetime slot for football, a time usually stacked with highly rated sitcoms, dramas, and reality programs? To ask this question, we turn to two resident experts, NPR TV critic Eric Deggans and NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman. Guys, and we should really point out that we should focus on your precise areas of expertise, because, Tom, you don't know much about TV, and Eric, you don't know much about football, right?
Exactly right.
That is wise.
I'm glad we have you both. Well, Tom, let me start with you. We've got NBC showing this game tonight, and then CBS takes over for a good number of Thursday nights into the season. Why is the NFL chasing an audience in the middle of the week?
Well, Thursday night is a big viewing night, as I believe Eric can confirm. And for the NFL, it brings in more viewers and fans who don't have cable. It's estimated that the NFL Network, which will be simulcasting these games with CBS, it's in about 70 million homes. Broadcast networks are estimated to be in about 115 million homes, and that's a lot more fans potentially for the NFL.
And so we should say Thursday night games were on NFL Network last season, so you're saying this move to the networks actually going to pick up more fans for the sport and for the league?
Yeah, it should. Sure.
Well, Eric, let me get the television perspective here. I mean, CBS, is it a wise move for them to air football games and give up on the traditional sitcoms and dramas?
Well, they're not giving up on the traditional sitcoms. They're just delaying them for the 8 weeks that they're going to air these eight games. And yes, it makes all kinds of sense. For NBC, the rival network, one reason why they were at the top of the ratings for viewers that advertisers love is because they have Sunday Night Football, which is the highest rated program on television. And CBS has promised its advertisers ratings that will be just under those Sunday Night Football games. So they are expecting to be the number two highest rated show on television with these Thursday night games. They ponied up $275 million to get the rights to air these games, and they're going to have their broadcast stars not only do the CBS games, they're going to do the games that air on the NFL Network that will not be on CBS. That's how badly they wanted this package.
So they're offering up their people to actually do the games that aren't even airing on their network.
Exactly. They only have the rights to do the games for one season, and they want this partnership to extend, and Les Moonves, who's the president of CBS, has made it a personal mission to forge this partnership between CBS and NFL on Thursday nights.
So they put up a ton of money to get the rights to this. They have to be expecting to make it up in advertising. I mean, if you're selling commercials during an NFL game, are you, if you're CBS, making a lot more than ads during shows like Elementary and Two and a Half Men that were airing in this slot last fall?
Well, they're asking for $500,000 per 30-second spot, and that is a really high number. We'll see if they get it from every advertiser, but yes, they are asking for a lot of money.
Well, Tom, we should say when these games just aired on the NFL Network in past years, I mean, some of the matchups weren't that great. I mean, they were pretty cruddy, but CBS is really pushing for good matchups, marquee matchups from the NFL this year, right?
Well, they are, but I will say that, you know, despite the matchups, there are drawbacks to any Thursday night game. I mean, it's a real short turnaround from the Sunday before. Players are banged up and hurting, and game plans really aren't as efficient or smooth or complex. Coaches sometimes feel like they have to rush strategies because there's not enough time to teach or practice.
Hmm. Well, I got to say, as far as the TV industry is concerned, people are going to watch anyway because it's football.
Well, if that's true, Eric, let me ask you this. I mean, do the other networks like NBC, ABC, if they know that people are going to be watching CBS just for the fact that there's football on, do they start rethinking their lineups based on that?
Oh, yeah. We've seen ABC and NBC both stack their Thursday schedule with female-skewing shows, assuming that all the guys will be watching football. So on ABC, they have Shonda Rhimes, their most successful showrunner with women, and they have her shows, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, and her new show, How to Get Away with Murder. And then on NBC, we see The Biggest Loser, a romantic comedy called A to Z that's new, Parenthood. These are all shows that do well with women. They figure they're going to cater to the football widows who may be in another room watching TV while their husbands are watching football.
It's NPR TV critic Eric Deggans and NPR sports correspondent Tom Goldman. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
This is Fresh Air. This weekend, the Starz Cable Network presents a new 10-part documentary series about the making of a new movie. But it's a competitive situation, with two different young directors trying to make their own distinct films from the same source material. The series is called The Chair, And our TV critic, David Bianculli, finds it fascinating.
Here's where I stand on so-called reality TV. All those shows that are built around people misbehaving to get attention and claw for fame. In other words, all those Real Housewives shows and every Big Brother and any show like it, I have absolutely no use for. The talent and competition shows, the real ones like American Idol and The Voice and So You Think You Can Dance, I like a lot more. But after several seasons, the repetition of the format, and especially the emphasis on the judges rather than the contestants, usually wears me down. But over the years, the reality TV shows I've stuck with the most are the ones where the true creative process is most in evidence. For example, I still enjoy watching Lifetime's Project Runway, the fashion design competition, even though it's been around for 10 years now. Yes, the diva personalities are front and center, but at the end of each hour, there's a fashion show in which each designer gets to display what he or she can do or can't do. Maybe that's why I'm so intrigued by The Chair, the new Starz unscripted TV series, the first one from that particular network, that's all about the creative process in action. It's created by Chris Moore, who teamed with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon on Project Greenlight way back in 2001. That's the series that selected a young would-be filmmaker from a large group of applicants and documented his efforts to make his first feature film. Affleck and Damon aren't around for this ride, but plenty of others are. The credits for The Chair identify 20 executive producers and producers, including actor Zachary Quinto, who plays Spock in the new Star Trek films. But it's Moore, right from the start, who's the real voice of The Chair, and who explains at the outset what his 10-part series is trying to achieve.
The Chair concept really came out of Good Will Hunting before we ended up with Gus Van Sant, who directed the movie. We worked with a couple different directors. Mel Gibson was one, Michael Mann was one. And so I've always been fascinated by trying to set up a situation where you could actually see how two different directors would take the same material and turn it into two separate movies. And what if you could really show that to people?
The Chair does precisely that. It starts with the same script, a coming-of-age story written by first-time screenwriter Dan Schaffer about young friends from a small Pennsylvania town returning home for Thanksgiving midway through their first term at college. That script is handed to the two chosen directors, who almost surely by design couldn't be more different. One is Anna Martamucci, a graduate of NYU Film School who has written and acted before but never directed. The other is Shane Dawson, an internet phenomenon who's been making YouTube videos almost daily for 8 years, and whose young following numbers more than 10 million subscribers, more than many cable networks. Both of them instantly set out to adapt the original script, but with very different approaches. Anna rewrites the dialogue almost completely, and keeps rewriting so she can delay flying to Pittsburgh and starting her duties as a director. Oh, and at almost every point, Anna's emotions are set on raw. Even when she's in private, recording her thoughts in her own video diary.
Why did I say I would do this? I don't know. This is a terrible idea. I am. Rob, the guy, one of the guys making this show, told me that I should film myself when I'm in a fear pocket. And so I'm in one. I'm definitely procrastinating because I think maybe if I don't pack, then I just won't have to leave.
Shane, meanwhile, is the complete opposite. If he's suffering, it's from overconfidence. He takes the script and adds lots of risque jokes and sight gags, and he also adds himself.
Ever since I heard about this project, I just assumed that I would be in the movie because acting, directing, and writing is, that's my thing. I decided to cast myself as Scott. He's one of the lead characters. And I can't imagine my debut movie not having me in it, especially for the audience, because that's what they've been watching for so long.
The person who's capturing all this action and turmoil as these two directors compete for the $250,000 prize and struggle to complete their respective movies is Anthony Sacco, who followed and filmed the contestants on both Project Greenlight and the early years of Project Runway. He's very good at capturing his subjects off guard. And in The Chair, he even films them complaining about Chris Moore when they've forgotten all about the cameras and microphones. The first two episodes of The Chair, provided for preview, were lots of fun to watch, even though I didn't end up rooting for either of the fledgling filmmakers. Maybe you'll like one director more than the other, and eventually, one film more than the other. Because when The Chair is over, Starz will premiere the two films that were made as a result. I'll have to wait until I see them to render a verdict on the final product. But the filmmaker's journey in The Chair, that's a reality TV show I can actually and heartily endorse.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, John Sheehan, Teresa Madden, and Yowei Shaw. WHYY's chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. I'm Terry Gross.